May I have your attention, please? The following is not the real Jeff Foxworthy.
If you know darn well that flailing and swatting at bees only antagonizes them, but you realize you did it last week anyway, you might be a beekeeper. If you ever address a queen bee as your highness, you might be a beekeeper. If you have ever made up a joke that begins, an Italian, a Carniolan, and a Russian walk into a bar, you might be a beekeeper.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by our good friends over at Man Lake. Our question of the day is this, and it's especially pertinent to sideliners. How many different income streams have you created for your beekeeping business? Today our guest is Ryan Griffith, and we'll be discussing the small business side of beekeeping, including taking care of other people's bees. Before we jump into that, a listener recently brought this tidbit of information to my attention. We all know that bee stings hurt a little bit, right? But have you ever heard of the Schmidt Sting Pain Index? Yes, there actually is such a thing. This Sting Pain Index rates the painfulness of 78 different stinging insects, and it rates the level of pain over 25 different body locations. The pain was rated on a 1 to 10 scale relative to a sting on the forearm. So, let's talk about bee stings now. I'm going to list the three least painful locations first. They were the skull, the middle toe tip, and the upper arm, all scoring just a 2.3. So, hey, if you're ever going to get stung, pick one of those places. But the three most painful locations were these. Number one, the nostril, coming in at a 9.0 on the pain index. Second was the upper lip at an 8.7. And third was, I'm not going to say this on a podcast. Let's just say, ladies, you don't have to worry about getting stung there. Anyway, it was a 7.3 on the pain index. So I'm curious, and please email me, eric@belovebeekeeping.com. Let me know your thoughts. Have you found more painful or less painful places? And go ahead and take a guess at which insects have the most painful stings. It's not a honeybee. Now, let's head to Connecticut for our discussion with Ryan. I'd like to welcome our special guest today to the show. We have Ryan Griffith coming to us from Connecticut. Hey, how you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. What's the name of your farm and apiary up there?
My farm's name is Necker's Farm, N-E-C-K-E-R-S Farm. We're out of Brantford, Connecticut. We're mostly honeybee management and honeybee rescues, but we also specialize in mushroom growing.
Okay, Necker's Farm, does that have anything to do with teenagers in the backseat of a car?
No. So I live in an area called Indian Neck in Brantford, Connecticut. And anybody that grew up here, like I did, you know, we're known as Neckers. We have an adjacent area that's called Stony Creek, and everybody's known as Creekers. So it's basically homage to the locals where I live.
So the Neckers and the Creekers, it's like the the Bloods and the whatever's the...
We actually go around the bonfire and have fun together.
Oh, good.
So it's never a competition. So it's a good town to live in.
Good. Hey, we have a ton to talk about today. You have so much experience. And I don't know where to jump in, so we're just going to jump in all over the place. And
Okay. Starting
with when we were texting the other night, you were catching a swarm in the dark.
Yes.
Is that normal for you to do this in the dark versus the day?
What I notice is if you don't get that swarm and you wait for the next day, a lot of times you're going to lose it. So it's better to take care of something now instead of putting it off for tomorrow because it might not be there tomorrow. I do a lot of them, unfortunately. A lot of them are usually angry. The one I did the other day, fortunately, was very peaceful, and I did it without a sting. It's a little bit more dangerous, but if you really care about these creatures, and we're a true honeybee rescue, and I always feel that the way a society treats the most fragile creatures around them is the best way to judge that society. And you never know what genetics you might get. That might be the genetics that might have the silver key for mite control. You never know. But yeah, we'll do a lot of rescues at night. I'm always working till sundown. We do 7 days a week, 16-hour days during the spring and summer, and it's just nonstop. But thankfully, we get the winters off.
You cannot tell me that beekeepers aren't hard workers.
We love it, though. Is it work, though, if you love what you do?
Exactly.
I know how sore I was last night. I think the hardest time I have is keeping a truck on the road, you know, because we put so many miles on our trucks going all over the place. I think that's probably the biggest issue I have is just keeping a truck healthy.
So do you find that catching swarms at night, is their temperament different than during the day?
They're more confused. So when they land on you, they're more apt to get into your clothing. I'm only going to wear a veil. I don't wear gloves. They're going to go where the warmth is. So your body is going to be the first spot. So that's where you're going to get the stings underneath your armpits. That's where you're going to get them in between your elbow. You know, anywhere where there's a joint, you're more likely to get stung. They're going to go to the back of your neck and try to climb up inside your veil. They seem more confused on average. It's not like they're directly trying to sting you like an angry swarm. It's more of they're going to crawl all over you and find an avenue, maybe up your pants cuff and sting you on your legs. And you're on an extension ladder in the dark. You don't have time to brush them off. You don't see them. And when you're getting stung under the clothing, you have to carefully carry that swarm down that ladder and just deal with them stinging you the whole time, because the worst thing you do is panic on a ladder.
Later, we're going to get to a wild and crazy beekeeping story of yours. So be thinking about that in the meantime. And I have a feeling you have a bunch of them.
Yeah, I was going to say which one.
Because in general, that was pretty good already. But you mentioned a second ago bee rescue. Tell us about your bee rescue operation. What do you mean by that?
So there's multiple reasons why I think that it's important to have honeybee rescuers. I think that it keeps the PR for beekeepers in the best avenue. Nothing is worse than having a neighbor that is head set on ruining your dream of being a beekeeper. They'll go to the local legislation. They'll talk really loudly. If their kid gets stung by a bee, swarm management is, I think, the second most important thing for backyard beekeepers next to mite management. I think that rescuing the bees isn't just close to my heart where, you know, I'm trying to make sure they have a good home instead of living in a house and basically dying off. We all know that if you leave a colony out in a tree or in somebody's house, they're more than likely going to die off. They might have that rare genetic code where they're mite resistant and they're able to survive. But I think it's good to have several honeybee rescuers in every single state to basically lessen the avenue where everybody's against the beekeeper. I noticed a lot of people have been seeing in the last 10 years where somehow beekeepers have become somewhat of a villain in certain groups. And by rescuing these bees, by getting them on the tree before they make their way in a house, by being available to get them out of the house, it puts a lot of people at ease. I'd say the most panicked I've ever seen a human being is when they have 10,000 bees coming down their chimney and they're in the middle of the living room and they have small children in that house. I've seen more people hyperventilate, and part of my job is also to calm those individuals, getting them to relax, telling them, listen, they're going to go to the windows, they're going to go to the lights, put shoes on, you're going to be safe. They're not interested in you. They've crashed into your house. This is a very chaotic thing. Calming down the people sometimes is the best skill that I have, and getting them to realize that we're going to get through this. I really think that having individuals on our side is the most important part of beekeeping right now.
That's a great point.
Especially for the backyard beekeepers.
And calming those individuals can calm the bees a little bit as well.
Absolutely. They know they can sense our pheromones. You could tell an angry person when they come to your house when the bees are right in their face. I have a 9, a 7, and a 5-year-old that are walking up and down my driveway every single day, and they're riding their bikes down the driveway. There could be 30 beehives just in my driveway alone. And obviously there's a ton in the backyard and whatnot. my kids will walk right past it. They don't even pay attention to the bees anymore. They're, you know, they'll notice them if they're getting a little agitated. Obviously they'll take pause, but I think it's always funny when somebody from the town has to come by or somebody's grabbing honey and my 7-year-old will go right up to them by the hand. Oh, don't worry about it. Just walk with me and you're safe. And they'll bring them right to my door. I absolutely love that she has the skill set to be so confident to just go right up to another adult, bring them down right to my front door and say, listen, they're not that dangerous. And I think except for sick bees and certain genetics, most bees are very peaceful. They're herbivores. They're meant to be peaceful. If you're not messing with them, they're going to remain peaceful. And I always say that 9 times out of 10, if you have angry bees, it's on the beekeeper. And that's what I've noticed over the years. We do a lot of rescues, so sometimes we have to change those behaviors over a couple generations and show them that we're there to feed them, we're there to take care of them, and we mean no harm. But, you know, usually I could turn a colony around if you do the right avenues. I've had really angry queens that I've turned to somewhat peaceful queens.
So is this a full-time business for you?
Yes. Yeah. It's 7 days a week, 16-hour days during season. And we look forward to the rain days sometimes so I can get a little bit of sleep. But even then, you know, if it's after June, we're jarring honey, we're labeling honey. We have around 50 customers that have private apiaries that we manage full time. They will pay us to inspect the bees, pay us for the colonies, and pay us to jar their honey, label their honey. It's basically the full aspect. So they get pollination services and they get all the honey without any of the hard work. It's usually a real positive for more of the affluent community.
Yeah. So I think a lot of beekeepers are trying to figure out, especially hobbyists and sideliners are trying to figure out other ways to make money doing this thing that they love. So I would love for you to talk to us a little bit more about that. Do you have to be in an affluent community for this? And I would assume probably, but how do you get that business? What do they expect you to do? Do they get any tax breaks for having bees around? Give us the whole lowdown.
So in the United States of America, you know, particularly like solar fields, they have to have a certain percentage of agriculture. So that's one avenue right there. And honeybees are the quickest, smallest land impact agricultural option that you could put right on a solar yard, and they get their tax credit for it. So they need to do that by law to basically get that agricultural tax credit. If you get into it with some of the solar companies, they might put you in the right position to do that for them, and they'll pay you for every inspection fee and whatnot. I would always say don't sell yourself short. If you're going to go into somebody else's hives, you're going to manage them, possibly get stung 10, 15 times, you deserve to get paid well. The other part of your question is an affluent neighborhood. There are always some individuals in your area that have extra income or extra funds that they might want to spend on having pollination there year round or just have bees near year round. I can't tell you how many clients I have that will put a chair right in front of their bees and just watch them during their morning coffee. Beekeeping is extremely therapeutic. I have individuals that got out of the military and they have PTSD, and they say that this is one of the things that really soothes them. It's very rhythmic. You know, the sounds from bees, the movement from bees, it's very calming. One thing I tell a lot of my clients, if you ever get in a bad argument, you lose a family member, get into those beehives, because I think it's one of the only things that I can think of that can, it's mood altering. It's not, you know, your coffee's mood altering, you know, somebody wants to smoke or somebody wants to drink, that's mood altering. This is something where there's no ill effects and it's mood altering. So if you've had a bad day, you go in that beehive, you might forget why you had a bad day because you're so micro-focused on those bees that you're not thinking about what you need to wear for the next event, what you need to buy for a gift, whatnot. You're only thinking about those bees because if you mess up, they're going to light you up. And if you really care about them, you're not going to want to put your hands around the other side of the frame too fast and squish them or whatnot. You're going to take great care of them. So the only thing you're focused on is those bees that are in front of you. And I'll hear a lot of people say, you know, after they went through those beehives, they forgot why they were angry. You know, I always tell married couples, if you're in a fight, go in that beehive. And if they're like, you know, Ryan, we forgot why we were fighting. And it works. It works. And it's, you know, imagine just spending an hour doing something and you're no longer upset, or you have a clearer view on what made you upset in the first place.
Wow.
I think honeybees have that ability.
Apiary marriage therapy. That is, you've just created something. By the way, we've had the guys from Hives for Heroes on the show.
Yeah.
And it was really fun to talk about what they do. And there are other similar kinds of organizations out there too, that do a great job. And yeah, that therapeutic aspect can really be amazing. I'm curious, if you have some client that just loves their bees and has morning coffee with them, and then in the spring their bees are dead, what do they think about you as their beekeeper? Or do you give them realistic expectations up front?
I don't lie to my clients. I try to tell them exactly what the deal is. Generally, we have an 80 to 90% overwintered rate.
Quick break to thank our presenting sponsor, Man Lake. I've found that Man Lake has absolutely everything I need to take care of the health of my bees. Mite checks and treatments, beetle management, hive health and nutrition, pollen substitutes, food and feeders, and the knowledge base to help you know how to use it, including Bella, their AI beekeeping genius. Just look for her icon in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen at manlakeltd.com. While you're there, don't forget your discount code MLBLOVE10. It's in the show notes for $10 off your first $100 purchase.
This is the first year where we lost about 40% of our colonies. The bee loss was extensive. I know I'm ahead of the national average, but I'm not used to losing 40% of my colonies overwintered. We did the same thing as we did every single year. I was in colonies on December 28th, booming, strong, beautiful colonies. Everything looked great. I go there 6 weeks later, and in Connecticut, all of January and the first 2 weeks of February were cold. And there wasn't a day this past year that it really made it over 40 degrees. So the concept of absconding, even absconding slowly, you would think that the bees would die right in front of the hives. I was coming back to collapsed hives that there was zero bees in them. And there's no bees at the bottom board. There's no bees in front of the hive. And it was one of the first times where I even know what I'm doing? Like, you know, and that's something you get as a beekeeper. You're always questioning yourself. My grandfather said a beekeeper with more answers than questions is not necessarily a beekeeper I would trust. And I mean, anybody that's talking to me, you know, particularly clients, they'll see I change my answers in real time. I'll look at a frame and I'll say, Nope, we're not going to do what I said. We're changing what we're going to do. Just based on what you see. And that's you have to have adaptability as a beekeeper.
Yeah. So where did those bees go?
I don't know. And I know that a lot of people in my state and a lot of other states that I talk to experience the same exact thing. Really strong mite free colonies.
Yeah.
Or at least low mite numbers that just disappeared. I did notice a month ago, queens that were laying really well at the beginning to middle of February into the beginning of March, completely stopped laying and either became a drone layer or just completely disappeared. And I've never experienced it. One or two colonies, you know, we manage around 500, give or take. This year, our numbers are lower because we lost so much, but we'll probably get up to 500 by the end of the season. The queens just either disappeared, became drone layers, and it's something that I've not experienced before. And it's brand new. So these are colonies that made it, that their queens still collapsed. And I was able to, you know, move brood over and place queens where I could. It's something new, and I've never seen it before. And I'm only a small amount of information, you know, you need thousands of hives to basically get a lot of data.
Well, there's a lot of research going on trying to figure out what happened this winter.
My gut, it's just my gut. I think it's something to do with the queens. And it's something's going on with, I mean, queens used to last 5 years easy. Now they're only lasting a year and a half to 2 years.
You think it's genetic or do you think it's chemical? You think it's herbicides, pesticides? I know you have to speculate. I'm asking you to speculate.
You always get in trouble when you make these clear answers. there's a lot going. There was a recent study about aluminum being found in honeybees' guts, and we know that aluminum can possibly alter several animals' sexual reproductive organs. If it's in our atmosphere and it's affecting them, they could be the canary in the hole. And, you know, if it's affecting them, it's going to affect us.
Yeah.
I know personally from my experience that having my firstborn was a lot of jumping through hoops. And I know a lot of my friends experienced that, where it wasn't easy having our firstborn, having our first child. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of studies in Europe where they're having issues with that. So I'm wondering maybe if it is something atmospheric. Maybe if it is chemical, maybe if it is pesticide related, am I going to state that it is? No, I can't. I could never do that without the research in front of me.
No, I only asked your opinion. That's okay.
Yeah. Is my opinion? It could be plausible. Very plausible.
I just don't think it's genetic. And if it's not genetic, then it's something going on. I just read an article about microplastics.
Yeah.
Do they have something to do with it?
Yep.
Is it all the glyphosate out there? Is it aluminum? Is it
right?
And chances are it's a combination of things, right?
Right. The thing that drives my brain to really think is, how did it hit the whole country all at once?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It didn't just hit the pollinate, because everybody wanted to focus on the almonds, but it didn't just hit the almonds. It hit the Northeast with people that didn't touch the almonds. It hit the entire country. So certain people were unaffected. The one of the yards where I had the highest queen failures, I got 37 out of 45, actually 42, because three didn't go into fall. 37 out of 42 made it through winter, and then I started seeing a couple of queen collapses. So that gears me to think that something's up, and I don't think it's something that's going to just go away tomorrow. I think we might be in the long haul. Whatever is happening, it's not just we can treat for mites and it's going to go away. That's my gut. That's what I feel. I feel like it's queen related. What made it queen related? Sure, it could be chemical, could be pesticide, could be something in the atmosphere that we don't even understand. Could be microplastics. Could it be a combination of all of them? Sure, it could be. We're always trying to find the cure without trying to find the cause. And we do that with everything. We always try to cure cancer. We never try to figure out what's causing it or eliminate what's causing it. We'll put a label on something instead of eliminating it from production, which kind of seems backwards as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, on your successful years, your 80-90% success rate, which is great. What's your secret there? Is it mostly mite control?
Mite control. I treat 6 to 7 times. I'm a big proponent of oxalic acid. Love reading what Dr. Randy Oliver puts out. I think he's a great resource for anybody that really wants to get good at beekeeping, because he doesn't give his opinions. He just gives you the data and he lets you come up with your own opinions. And I think that's the best way to approach it, because we all know beekeeping is regional. You could have certain pollens in your area that will create stronger bees. You could have certain pollens in areas that'll make weaker bees. Everybody knows if you send bees to blueberries, it's going to possibly weaken the colonies a little bit. And I guess that's because the acidic in the soil that might translate into their pollen. Everything's regional. So I love reading, you know, a lot of his stuff, because that's just straight facts. And I can implement them or not implement them. I think that mites are, I want to say, easy when you get on a regimen. And you also have to keep testing. Because I believe mite drift is a real thing. If a colony collapses near you, guess what? All those mites, as your colonies are going to rob them out, you can go from 0 out of 100, you know, mites to 10 or 15 out of 100 in a day. That's a real thing. One thing I noticed out of rescues is particularly dead outs. When I go to a colony that died in somebody's house, you'll see where the mites were chewing out of the dead pupa, and they're still alive after the colony collapses. So that's telling me that, you know, when this hive is getting robbed out, they're just going to hitchhike right onto those bees. And if it collapsed because they have something like a 60 out of 100, you know, 60 mites per 100 bees, that's a high infestation. And if that's immediately getting robbed out, all those mites are going to your hive. So you could do everything right and still collapse on mites. I like to treat 6 to 7 times I like formic acid. I like oxalic acid. Once in a while, we do use thymol based, but those are pretty much our regimen. We try to stick to organic, and I'm not saying go either way. I tell people what the options are. I'm organic. If my customer doesn't want to be organic, that's their choice. And I'm not really going to push it on anybody. That's just my choice to be organic.
Yeah. Hey, tell me more about your business model. Give people other ways and ideas of how they can make money doing what they love.
Well, you got to think outside the box. You know, the Sea of the Bees has been a big slogan, and it was really about our native pollinators. I'm not going to say honeybees hijacked it, but we got to the point where we keep talking about how our native pollinators are in dire straits or even becoming extinct in some species. We don't have the numbers anymore to basically cover pollination throughout the country. And that's more than just the food we grow. That includes all the trees that are in our environments. And honeybees quickly bring a pollinator into your backyard that can basically pollinate a lot of the trees that people don't even think about. I'm sure when, I forget what tree it was, when the dodo went extinct and the tree that they used to produce, they didn't even think about that tree until 20, 30, 40 years ago, later, when they stopped seeing saplings. It wasn't something that they originally thought of. When you bring honeybees onto a property, you're bringing pollination. You're bringing it to the maples, the oaks, all the other wonderful trees that we have in our area. So if you can sell that to your customers, you're being honest. You're being truthful. We don't have the native pollinators anymore. This is a pollinator. Do you want to pollinate the trees on your land? Do you want to keep your ecosystem healthy? Do you want to feed the birds? This is a box that creates 2,000 dead insects a day that can feed a ton of birds in your area. That could be a little bit morbid to some, but it's the truth. Who hasn't seen the catbird sitting in front of the hive just picking off one after another bee? And, you know, that might be their only food in that area. You walk around sometimes and you see nothing flying in the air. Putting bees on other people's property can be profitable if somebody's willing to take care of them. And there needs to this war against native pollinators against honeybees, I just found is kind of ridiculous. They've coexisted since Jamestown. There was never really a big issue until we started using a lot of pesticides. We need a pollinator in our environment. We have one. It's called the honeybee. It's a great pollinator. It works. If somebody wants to privately own them on their property, you can sell them the bees. You can sell them the gear. You can sell them your maintenance services. And they're provided with something that is going to be pure magic on their property. I'd say don't sell yourself short. I would say if you're brand new at this, you deserve $50 an hour right off the rip. Beekeepers are struggling right now to sell honey, to sell products, because it's a lot of influx of foreign honeys, particularly in our country, and a lot of it's funny honey. I mean, how many times have you gone to a market, you've tried honey, and you said, nope, that's not honey? I've done it more times than I could count, and you wonder how they can get away with it, but you're also not the person that's going to call anybody out. But you know when you have real honey. It's got a taste complex of, you know, 20 seconds where it's ups and downs, spicy, and ooh, there's floral in it. I always say the word magic. It's magic in your mouth, you know?
Yeah.
And it keeps you healthy, and it's medicine.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I got into it in the first place.
We have doctors in our town that are actually prescribing honey for the flu.
Yeah.
It works. I mean,
it does all kinds of good things. I got into it for the allergy deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it works. Speaking of funny honey, there is a particular chicken restaurant chain that's been around in this country and, well, all over the world for decades. And if you go in and you get one of their nice biscuits and then you go over to the condiment shelf and they have what they call honey flavored spread or something like that. Okay. There's an extreme example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Compared to real life good honey.
And once you eat real honey, you can't go back.
We could probably talk for hours about how you take care of clients. We're not going to run out of time before then, but I have one question. Do they expect some kind of a really beautiful hive, or do you throw old boxes on their property, or you know what I mean?
Depends on the client.
Yeah. Okay.
I have yards that should be in magazines that could be in magazines. I have yards of clients that I can't take pictures of because they're very, very private and they don't want any pictures on the property. I have yards that have a $10,000, you know, electric fence. We have a lot of bears where we live. It depends on the property. I also have people that want the used box. Give me the old stuff. And that's fine. I'll be there. And I have one yard where I have six different hives there that are each painted in a custom Easter egg color. And it looks like six Easter eggs that, you know, Easter egg hives that are right on a hill. It depends on your customer. And if you're going to be a salesman of putting bees on somebody's property, you have to work with what they like. I don't like gimmicks. I can't stand gimmicks or snake oil salesmen, but I will cater to aesthetics. So if somebody needs a specific aesthetics, a certain type of hive stand, I will definitely make it happen. I try to gear them away from certain types of gimmicky hives that are for other countries. And I'm sure you've heard it 100 times. I don't want to mention the name, but where it's easy extraction and the people love it and it has the cheap little wood parts and it's not made for overwintering. I just say, just keep it simple. Langstroth is, you know, or top bar. I prefer Langstroth 100 out of 100 times. Some will come out there and look at the hives with me. Some will just do it once or twice and say, it's not for me. And I take care of it 100 times. Some I don't even talk to. Some they, you know, just you bill them and they basically pay the bill and you never even see them or hear from them. It all depends on each individual. We all have individual personalities, so you can get clients from all different spectrums. Once you get the ball rolling and they talk to their friends and they say, oh, we got a really good beekeeper, it's, you're going to get business through word of mouth. You're going to have a good overwinter percentage. You're going to have to be honest. You're going to have to not do any, you're almost always on camera anyway. So don't do anything that's disingenuine. I've seen it. I've gone to somebody, you know, people's houses where they charge, and there's people that do it. They'll charge $10,000 a season and they'll only go there for 4 or 5 visits. That's not my business model. I don't believe in that at all. And then I'll go to the hives and they're loaded with mites. They're loaded with hive beetles. There's no honey to be had. And this colony just collapsed. So they just did it for a paycheck. If you're going to do this and make it profitable, it's absolutely possible. But you're going to have to be honest, because people that have extra money to spend on bees for like a side thing,
yeah,
they're not going to want to spend it on bees for a gimmick. They've saved up a certain amount of money. They're smart enough. Don't take your clients as foolish individuals. You know, be honest, be real. You know, yes, we're beekeepers. Yes, we have a little idiosyncrasies. We like talking to insects more than we like talking to people most times. Let them know that. We're not going to be that person that's going to basically be a servant on their property. We're going to be quirky. That's who we are, you know, and we might talk to ourselves, mutter to ourselves as we're going through the bees and whatnot. That's who we are. Show them who you really are, and they'll appreciate it. Because too often or not, that, you know, some of the individuals, the clientele, that you're bringing something different to the table that they've not experienced before. And it's just being you. And then most beekeepers are very similar. It's just be you and you'll do fine. That's the advice I would give any new beekeeper that wanted to take care of bees on somebody else's property and start a business model like that.
Man, I'd hire you right now. You're a good salesman on this too.
I just love what I do.
I can tell.
So,
and that makes a huge, huge difference. All right. I want to hear if you can think of one of your favorite wild and crazy beekeeping stories. What happened to you?
Oh gosh. All right. I'll give you one of my rescues. I was in Dutchess County, New York, and I came there, you know, mid-afternoon to go look at the house. I'm up on an extension ladder. I'm looking at the hive that's in this house. It's an old, old colonial house, plaster ceilings, plaster walls. And I start taking a look at it. And the reason why they called me is because bees were getting stung, or people were getting stung on the street. I was like, okay, there probably wasn't bees. This is about 30 feet up. I get up there. The second I'm up there, I'm already getting lit up and these bees are coming at me. I got to the point where I looked at everything and I noticed that this was a massive colony. And when I thermal imaged everything, it was probably a radius of about 3 feet. So that means 6 feet by 6 feet.
Wow.
And I'm about 5.5 to 6 hours away from home. And I tell the homeowner, I'm like, I'm going to have to stay here tonight. I'm just going to sleep in my truck and whatnot. He goes, no, come to my house. We start first thing in the morning. It was a 16 hour removal. And I must have gotten stung well over 100 times, and it was plaster ceilings, cutting everything out. That was, just doing everything on a ladder, having everything overhead. Your veil is pressed up against your face. So you're getting stung in the face when every time they drop on you, you're covered in honey. You're everything from top to bottom. You're just covered. One of the worst things about being on a ladder doing a cutout is when the honey starts really getting on that ladder, and now you no longer have a good footing. And so you're trying to balance this 15 pound comb that you're trying to carefully bring it down so you don't make the bees angry. Meanwhile, you're basically walking on honey, which feels like ice, and they're stinging you consistently during the whole time. And it's like you have to watch it to see how chaotic it is, and you're just thinking about how dumb am I to do this right now? But you got to love it. You got to love the bees to do it. If I didn't have that love for, there's no way anybody else would do it. If you don't have the love for bees, what would you be doing? Getting stung 100 times, covered in honey, sticky, and then the plaster dust is getting in between your joints. So it's just scratching everything. I've probably been up 80 feet up a pine tree collecting a swarm. And I would say that the cutouts are far worse, far more dangerous. You're 80 feet up a tree and you feel that branch creak underneath your foot and you're like, oh man, here it is. This is the last one. Then you have a certain sense of calm when you finish. That's success. When you rescue that colony and you have the queen in your hand and you see all the bees, even if they were just angry and a bowl full of vinegar, you get that colony to basically reproduce and they get a second chance. That makes it kind of worth it. It makes it, I told you earlier, we rescue snapping turtles. We rescue birds. I was feeding birds in high school. I'd get up every 2 hours just to feed a baby bird with a dropper. It makes it worth it when you do a release or if you rescue those animals, because even if they just look back for a second, even if they don't look back for a second, you feel like you did something and you don't know what that snowball effect is down the road. But yeah, I could give you hundreds of stories of rescues that were kind of awry so you're only supposed to go up about 4 sections of a staging. I've had many where I'm 6 sections of staging up the side of the house and we're not tied into the building. And again, everything's covered in honey and you're doing your best or you're on top of the roof or whatnot. And, you gotta have a little bit of crazy in you, I guess. But at the same time, love what you do.
Well, you got to love the bees. And Ryan, you love the bees.
I do.
You're willing to risk your neck for the bees. Hey, thanks a ton for being with me on the show today. I'm going to have you back sometime. You've been a delight.
All right. Well, I was happy to be here.
Thanks again for joining us here on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Mann Lake. Remember right now to follow or subscribe and share this podcast. Also, a quick shout out to Vita Bee Health for their support. Vita's Varroa Control range of products includes Apistan, Apigard, and now Varroxan, extended release oxalic acid strips. Thanks, guys. Enjoy spring, everybody. Enjoy your bees. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.